You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today. It's Friday, May 18th, 2018. Thanks so much for joining me this morning. We're going to be talking about, obviously, the continuing, the biggest story in American history in modern times is what Obama did to his political opponents. We often talk about the Watergate. We hear about Watergate, the legendary, infamous Watergate. And by the way, Watergate was not what was over what it was purported to be, but everything seems to be set to the scandal of Watergate. Well, if Watergate is, we'll say, a 50 on a scale of 1 to 100, what we're seeing today would be really off the scale, but closer to 100, I suppose, in terms of criminality, in terms of people involved, in terms of importance in American history. So what we're living, what we're watching, what we're living today is one of the most important stories in modern American history. So we cannot really talk about this enough, I suppose. It's kind of like, you know, I was not alive during World War II. My father, of course, fought in the South Pacific, and he was obviously that generation was alive. What did you talk about during World War II? You talked about World War II because that was the biggest story. Well, this is a war as well, and I'm not comparing it, of course, what's going on. I'm not trying to compare it to real war, of course, but it's the espionage part of it. And the espionage part of what's taking place was revealed yesterday much by accident. In the New York Times, I talked about this when I appeared on InfoWars, hosted the fourth hour yesterday. I want to thank InfoWars for letting me do that. And I'm not sure how many people caught me there, but it was fun. In fact, I invited Paul Williams on to join me. Alex Jones had Rodney Howard Brown, like him, hate him, whatever, you know, pastor, South African pastor, about the book, The Killing of Uncle Sam. And of course, Brown and Paul Williams are co-authors of that book, fantastic book. It's due out, I think, today. Anyway, it's a great book. You can pre-order it from the InfoWars store itself. But all the proceeds go to a specific school, and it's really a lot of information. But having said all of that, the biggest story, again, back to where I was at, the biggest story, of course, is this espionage, this takeover, this coup of our government. And pull up a chair. Let's talk. We need to talk. Grab some coffee. We got to talk about this. Just let me ask you, are you in agreement with me that this is the story? And if so, how much of this do we all understand? Are we? Because this is so big and convoluted and twisted. And why isn't everyone talking about this? That's kind of my I look around and I think, well, why aren't more people talking about this? Are you tired of hearing about it? Look, I get it, I understand, but hopefully we can rise to a new level here in this broadcast. And I want to thank, by the way, thank you so much, everyone who has sent me emails in response. I asked a question, you know, give me your feedback and such. Oh my goodness. More than I could have ever imagined. Thank you. Thank you. Nancy R., thank you so much. And Linda M., of course, Roy Davis, all the time. Thank you. Thank you, Captain Roy. Paula, Carol, Kathy, Frank, Walter, thank you. David S., Randy, Mark H., Kevin, thanks. Thanks. How's the Northeast doing? How's the weather up there? Anyway, but receiving so many informative emails, it's delightful to read, and I certainly appreciate your input. So thank you. Read them all, like I said, but so many. I just named off a handful. Anyway, Donald Trump's been in office for 484 days. And I suspect that everyone felt that things were going to change almost immediately upon his installation in office. And of course, that doesn't work that way. 365 of those days, he's been under attack by Robert Mueller. Something happened yesterday in the... a lot of things happened yesterday, but I listened and read some, I listened to some important audio segments from many of the big talkers and, of course, the usual people on panels and such. And I read so much about what is, you know, what's going on. This to me, when the OIG report is released, look, I know I talked yesterday about this and saying, you know, I'm not so sure this is. We're going to have to see. We're going to have to wait this out because if you can expose all the criminality all day long, but if no one brings people to justice or indicts, you know, people, then it's an exercise in futility. Now, that of course was my thought yesterday, and that of course would result in blood on the streets. That's my belief, and I still believe that today. As much as I am somewhat cautiously optimistic in this, I do have that sense that we're not going to see the full force of the indictments against the people, you know, against the Hillary Clintons and the Obamas and such. Can you imagine, by the way, just picture this, picture Hillary or Obama, either one in handcuffs, being indicted or in being taken to their arraignment or whatever, in terms of their involvement, from their involvement, Obama with respect to the weaponization of the Department of Justice and the FBI and his collusion and criminal conspiracy against a political opponent. And on the other side, you've got Hillary Clinton for any one of any part of the criminal activity in which she was involved. So, but imagine the optics there. How do you think this country would respond to that? Have you thought about that? It's one thing to take a McCabe or a Peter Strzok or a Page or someone, or, you know, somebody like you and I mean, you know, no one would care. But to take somebody like that, at the level of Obama and Clinton, wow. Do you think that there would be blowback? Do you think that there would be absolute pandemonium on the streets? I do. What about if nothing happens? Would there be pandemonium on the streets? Yeah, I kind of do think that as well. So where are we at? We're looking at, in my view, inevitable crisis in the near term, I think. That's kind of the way I'm looking at this. But let me get into some absolutely important pieces of information that perhaps escaped your radar, or it's just too far down for you to take the time to look at. And that's not a diss against anyone. That's just, man, there's just so much here. But some things I think are going to be important that you're going to be hearing about tomorrow, again, giving it to you today. So the first thing, we've heard so much about the naming of this operation against Donald Trump, Crossfire Hurricane. I would turn, I suppose, if I was to look at the amount of coverage this received, I would turn to the piece by Andrew McCarthy. Again, if you like him, hate him, you know, whenever I bring up a name, just so I don't have to keep saying this, it doesn't matter whether you care for this person or don't care for the person. If the information is accurate and well stated, I'll cite the source and I'll cite the person. So anyway, Andrew McCarthy brings up Crossfire Hurricane in the National Review. And I'm going to cite from this because I was going to yesterday. I got to tell you, yesterday when I was on with, when I was hosting the fourth hour, you wear an earpiece and I was getting a lot of feedback. Do you ever have someone, you're trying to talk and you've got someone yammering in your ear? And of course that maybe you might think to those, you know, funny, YouTube videos about, what was his name? Lawrence O'Donnell yelling, you know, who's yelling in my ear and stuff like that. But I had some issues with a time lag, so in my earpiece. But anyway, I want to get into this, and I just couldn't do it with the level of seriousness that I needed to do. But the New York Times wrote a piece about the investigation. And in this piece, they acknowledged, perhaps deliberately, the origins of the spying, the origins of placing a human asset into the Donald Trump campaign. Now, here's how I'd like you to think about this. Maybe you work at, I don't know, let's say you work at a bank, or let's say you work in an office environment, or wherever you might work. But you work with a bunch of people. And you've got new hires coming and people leaving and, you know, the normal transition during the course of your business. Imagine the FBI tapping a person to infiltrate your office where you work and to monitor, to surveil, to spy on you and your coworkers. Okay, so you got that in your mind, right? Now think one step further. Imagine that person in your office or whatever environment, work environment you might have. You go to lunch one day, let's say all together, you know, you have half a dozen or so people and you sit down at a table. And after a while, this person says, you know what? I got a great way to make money, to make extra money. And this person describes something, I don't know, something illegal, totally, absolutely illegal, but seemingly foolproof. And brings it up at lunch to you and your coworkers. Well, obviously, you know, you being of integrity and such, you blow it off. You say, now, come on, you know, that's not only is that illegal, that's stupid, leave me alone kind of stuff, go away. And you know, is he kidding? Is that person kidding or is whatever? But then the next day or maybe the next week, the same thing happens again. Okay, so now, you get that picture, right, in your mind? Because I like to simplify things down. All right, you get the picture. This person brought up something illegal at lunch with a half a dozen people. Now, this person goes, but unbeknownst to you, this person was working for the FBI. So in order to, and I know this is a stretch, but in order to justify that person's, the spy's engagement and involvement, he goes back to the headquarters, FBI headquarters, and says, okay, here's what we talked about during lunch. We talked about, and that person, you know, says illegal activity, but he brought it up. You didn't bring it up. You didn't agree to anything. Or the person says during that same lunch period that I referenced that, hey, what do you think about this? You know, and then proceeds to give you some sort of illegal activity in which you could be involved. Have you ever considered this or whatever? So in order to justify, in order for that spy to justify his or her involvement, he'll go back and not say that, well, I brought this up and it was not well received. No, this is what we talked about during lunch. We talked about, you know, insert illegal activity here. That, if as strained as I am to use that as an example, that is perhaps one of the best ways to describe what happened with the spy, with the FBI spy insertion of human spy, plural, by the way, into the Donald Trump campaign. It's not that, hey, these people turned us down. You know, these people said, no, 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 you know, just go away. And hey, thanks for the invite, but no, I don't think so. It's illegal. No, instead of reporting that, that person reported that, no, this is what we discussed during lunch. We discussed this illegal activity. And from that, they opened up a counterintelligence investigation. Now, as strange as that example might be, I don't know. Hopefully that might resonate with somebody out there in terms of really kind of painting the picture as to what happened. So that is what happened during the early moments of the Donald Trump campaign as he was the Republican nominee. Once he became the Republican nominee, then people at the Justice Department and the FBI, under the purview of Obama, got to work, and they inserted human spies into the campaign. One in particular, and I mentioned his name before, and this just came out yesterday on Laura Ingraham. Roger Stone was on Laura Ingraham talking about none other than Stephon Helper. So that's how this all began. Now, there are two parts, as I mentioned this, and I can't say stress this enough. There are two, subsequent to 9/11, and even before that, but especially subsequent to 9/11, the Department of Justice and the FBI have been kind of separated into two distinctly different departments. One is the criminal side, and the other is the counterintelligence side. Now, again, this is very simplistic. If I'm sure I have FBI agents listening to this, they may say, well, wait a minute, it's more than that. But I'm just for simplicity's sake. The criminal side, in order to begin an investigation, let's say begin an investigation on you or me or whoever it might be, there must be a reason. You just can't pick a person and say, okay, you know what, I'm going to find something on Joe Jones. All right, you just can't do that. And this is, you need a criminal predicate. And that's where that phrase comes, criminal predicate. You need a reason. On the counterintelligence side, you don't really need a reason. You need a suspicion. The problem with the counterintelligence side, under Obama, what they did with the FBI and Department of Justice, they walled off the counterintelligence away from the criminal side, and the counterintelligence side completely classified. And you know, if it was true to its cause, I would agree. Yeah, I get it. You don't want to be talking about potential terrorist activities or investigations into potential terrorist activities. So I understand that. But it operated without any oversight. As I said yesterday, and I've been saying this, without any investigative oversight, Inspector General oversight. And who did that? Sally Yates. She was the one that said, no, we cannot have any OIG. In fact, it's not within the legal mandate. That's Yates, of course, being a lawyer. That's her decision. That was her decision. So that's her fame, claim to fame, among other things, but that's one of them. All right. So you need a suspicion within the counterintelligence. You don't need a criminal predicate. So they opened this investigation of Donald Trump under the umbrella of the counterintelligence department of the FBI and Department of Justice. And that's where all of this was cooked up. All right. So then you've got Strzok and Page talking together, the 502 pages of text, please gouge my eyes out right now. Oh my goodness. But the name Crossfire Hurricane. You got to name an operation. It's got to be because it's cool, right? And Andrew McCarthy gets into this, how this came to be. So what I couldn't do yesterday during the fourth hour of Alex Jones, I'll do it right now. McCarthy wrote back yesterday that if you are a fading baby boomer like me, you're faintly amused that the FBI codenamed its Russia Trump investigation Crossfire Hurricane. It's an homage to the Rolling Stones' golden oldie, Jumping Jack Flash, which, come to think of it, he writes, might be just a perfect handle for John Brennan, the former Obama CIA director whose specter hovers over each critical juncture of the case. Now, I went extensively into Brennan's background a couple of days ago. Was it yesterday or the day before? Day before. So if you had not heard that about Brennan Benghazi and murder, please go back and listen to that. And if you think it's important enough, share it on social media. Share it with others, please. Download it, please, and share it. But, writes McCarthy, before it was known as classic rock, I listen to classic rock once in a while, do you? I mean, sometimes it's fun. You couldn't just play your Crossfire Hurricane on Spotify. No, you had to spin it. And fittingly, that's exactly what the New York Times had done in Wednesday's blockbuster report on the origins of the Trump-Russia probe. And he writes that the quick take on the 4,100-word opus, which, yeah, is that the gray lady buried the lead. All right, fair enough. You got to dig pretty deep to find that the FBI ran at least one government informant against the Trump campaign. And to note that the Times learned this because current and former officials leaked to reporters the same classified information about which, just days ago, the Justice Department shrieked extortion when Congress asked about it. No, you can't have this information. Rod Rosenstein and such, remember that? But that's not even the most important part of this story. What the Times story does make very explicit is that the Obama regime used its counterintelligence powers to investigate the opposition's party presidential campaign. This is what, for the majority of this, the existence of the Doug Hagmann radio show, this is what I've been talking about. Imagine the hubris. That should send chills up and down everyone's spine. And then remember when Susan Rice on Inauguration Day, remember what she did on Inauguration Day. I mean, she was unemployed 15 minutes after Donald Trump was sworn in. Remember me talking about this, where Susan Rice sent an email about previous meetings in the Oval Office with Obama and Comey, saying that we did everything by the book, basically covering her butt. Remember that? This fits in there as well. But there was no criminal predicate, as I mentioned earlier, to justify an investigation of any Donald Trump campaign official, Donald Trump or anyone. There is no official, no matter what you hear, what you read, there is none. You cannot find any. Believe me, I've looked as objectively as I could possibly look, and there is no criminal predicate. So again, it would be like sending an FBI agent or agents into the place where you work, maybe your home business or a family business. The same would apply. Maybe it would be a vendor or a client or something. It would be the same idea. But picking you without any reason whatsoever, except the reason that you're a competitor. That's it. That's your big crime. Well, given the fact that there's no criminal predicate to justify an investigation of any campaign official or Donald Trump, they didn't open a criminal investigation. Instead, they opened a counterintelligence investigation and hoped that evidence of crimes committed by Donald Trump officials would emerge. But an abuse of power to use counterintelligence powers, including spying and electronic surveillance, to conduct what is actually a criminal investigation. You see what I'm saying? This was at best a criminal investigation, if there was any predicate, which there was none, but they tossed it into the counterintelligence arena. And you know, the Times, they hardly mention the word counterintelligence. Why? It's not an accident, because the newspaper, the New York Times, is crafting the Democratic Socialist talking points. And here's exactly how things are to be spun. The FBI was very public about the Clinton email investigation. You remember that? Even making disclosures about it on the eve of election. Yet it kept the Trump-Russia investigation tightly under wraps, despite intelligence showing that the Kremlin was sabotaging the election for Trump's benefit, right? That's the talking point. This effectively destroyed the candidacy of Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton and gave the presidency to Donald Trump. That's their story. And you know what? They're sticking to it. That's the spin. And that's important for everyone to really understand how this is being bracketed or how this is being framed. So they're using this comparative analysis. We investigated Hillary Clinton in the criminal arena. We found nothing at all, no criminal intent. So we know that's it. We investigated Donald, or we're investigating Donald Trump in the counterintelligence arena. So it's really the same thing, except just different departments. No, it's not. the Clinton case was a criminal investigation that was predicated on a mountain of evidence incriminating Clinton and others, including people like Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson and the people at least in my view, Paul Combetta from Platte River Networks and all this. But there are numerous people. In fact, I should do a poster of, I got to get somebody to do some great, what do you call that, artwork, but they use Photoshop stuff. Yeah, one of those things. Should get somebody to do some Photoshop and make like this huge poster of all of the people involved. But anyway, remember back that, now, writes Andrew McCarthy here. I suppose I should mention this. He writes that Clinton, Hillary, did have one legitimate beef against the FBI. And that is this. At the time, FBI Director Comey, when he was director, went public with some, but by no means all, of the proof against her. Now, if you've been in law enforcement, I know Bob Maggie. Look, I know, for example, and I know a lot of people are involved in law enforcement, you know it's not proper for law enforcement officials to publicize evidence from a criminal investigation unless there are formal charges. So that's legitimate on its face, okay? But that's as far as I'll go. And that's as far as McCarthy went. But in the scheme of things, that was totally a very insignificant event. The scandal here is that Clinton was not charged. Now, she likes to blame Comey for her defeat, but she had a chance to win only because the Obama Justice Department and the FBI tanked the case against her in exactly the manner that Obama encouraged them to do in public commentary. Now, compare that to Donald Trump, the counterintelligence investigation. Unlike criminal investigations, counterintelligence matters, they are classified by their very nature. And if agents had made any public disclosures about them, they would have been committing crimes and violating very solemn agreements with foreign intelligence services, agreements without which those services would not share information that U.S. national security officials need in order to protect our country. So there is a legitimate reason for the counterintelligence side of things. But in totality, the problem is not that the FBI honored its confidentiality obligations in the Trump case while violating them in the Clinton case. No, no, no. The scandal, the crime is that the FBI, lacking any incriminating evidence, lacking any evidence needed to justify opening a criminal investigation or a counterintelligence investigation of the Trump campaign, Donald Trump, or anyone around him. Again, well, let me back up. Let me state this differently. The problem is that the FBI, lacking the incriminating evidence needed to justify opening a criminal investigation of Donald Trump, because remember, I made the distinction between criminal and counterintelligence, they decided to open a counterintelligence investigation. There, that's better. I stated that better. And that was done under the purview, direction perhaps, of Barack Obama and John Brennan. Let's not forget Brennan here, because he plays a really important role in this. Now, again, I draw your attention to that Inauguration Day email by Susan Rice, where she said we did everything by the book. Oh, wow. And I would also draw your attention to the time period here as well. All of this happened after Donald Trump was secured the nomination, the Republican nomination for president. So just to draw the lens back a little bit, you've got Obama working on behalf of Hillary Clinton. And again, there's no love lost there really much between Clinton and Obama, but certainly Obama playing that role into wanting to get this communist elected, communist meaning Clinton, into office. So weaponizing the Department of Justice and the FBI and who within the FBI. Mark Levin said a great, yesterday's show had a great piece, a great audio segment there. There were about a half a dozen or so officials within Department of Justice and the FBI. Well, I would say probably 10 or 12. You've got Loretta Lynch and, of course, James Comey. You've got Page and Strzok and all of the usual people. But they worked together in order to frame, to set up Donald Trump. As I mentioned earlier, that example, if you were working and somebody sent in an undercover operative, FBI operative, and mentioned, for example, hey, what do you think about doing this? What do you think about robbing the bank down the road? What do you think about this? And I got this perfect plan to rob the bank. And you and others say, get out of here. You're nuts. So instead of saying, well, I broached the subject with them, and they said that I was nuts, and so there's nothing here. No, instead of saying that, what they said was, we discussed robbing the bank. And that's what people are seeing. They're seeing that false, hollow narrative. And I hope that example helps. This is very convoluted and very difficult to wrap your mind around because there are so many moving parts to this. Now, let me make one point here. Because Russia, some people have this idea that Russia has clean hands. No. Russia has been trying to influence our elections forever. All right? Just understand that. And if the FBI or the Department of Justice opened up an investigation of just Russian interference, that's one thing. But that's not what they did. They opened up a counterintelligence investigation, not just against Russia, but they opened up a counterintelligence investigation against the Trump campaign. Two distinctly different situations and scenarios. And the media, this democratic socialist complex, has tried from the very beginning to conflate these two things. What two things? Again, a counterintelligence investigation against Russia and a counterintelligence investigation against Donald Trump. Understand the difference? Yes. Okay, and that's important. There's a very critical distinction here, which explains the desperation to convince the public that Putin wanted Trump to win. It explains the stress on contacts, no matter how slight, between the campaign figures within the Donald Trump campaign and the Russians. What they're trying to do is they're trying to fill a gaping void in the hope that you don't notice this. Even if Putin did want Trump to win, and even if Trump campaign advisors did have contacts with Kremlin-tied figures, there's no evidence of participation by the Trump campaign in Russian espionage, which is akin to the example I used. You get somebody coming into your office, and, you know, at lunchtime one day, let's go rob this bank, and I've got this perfect plan. What do you think? And you say, absolutely not. Yeah, but it's foolproof. No. So that spy goes back and reports that, hey, what did we talk about during lunch? We talked about robbing a bank. This is all you're hearing. You're not getting the full story. And this is the difference. I hope that example kind of cleared some things up. And the distinction between the counterintelligence versus criminal, absolutely critical to understand. And the fact that they lacked, the media lacked any meat to report. So that's how they reported things. So at the height of the 2016 presidential race, the FBI collaborated with the CIA to probe an American political campaign. Enter John Brennan. John Brennan already compromised, in my view, based on Benghazi and all things prior, his work for so long at the Saudi outpost as a mission chief there. All right. That is the proof, by the way, that would have been needed just by investigating Americans. In other words, the participation of the Donald Trump figures of Russian espionage. If they participated, kind of like saying, if you would have responded, in the example I used, if you had said, yeah, you know, all right, tell me more about this plan of yours about robbing the bank. Huh, maybe we could get away with it. That's what they want you to think. They want you to think that members of the Donald Trump campaign were actually active participants when in fact that they weren't. Oh, and who was the person mentioned by Roger Stone on Laura Ingraham, on the Ingraham panel yesterday? Stefan Halper, the man I did a show on not too long ago telling you exactly who he was. I went where others did not want to go, identified this individual. Now, I believe he is one of more than one. Okay, he's one of more than one such human assets. So you heard it on this show, and for the first time, perhaps publicly, in any public venue on cable news, you heard it last night on the Laura Ingraham Show. Now, under federal law, to establish that an American is acting as an agent of a foreign power, the government must show that the American is purposely engaging in clandestine covert activities on behalf of that foreign power, and that it is probable that these activities violate federal criminal law. You get a counterintelligence investigation, but you still have the federal law structure. And that's for people who want to look this up. You can see this under FISA Title 50, U.S. Code, Section 1801, Subsection B2. I'll say it one more time for the people who want to look this up. Just search the Title 50, search FISA Title 50, U.S. Code, Section 1801, B2. That further explained, you can get further explanation for that by looking up that statute. But, you know, if the FBI did have that kind of evidence, they would not have had to open a counterintelligence investigation. They would not have had to use the Clinton campaign, their opposition research, which was what? The Steele dossier, to get FISA court warrants. They would instead have opened a criminal investigation, just as they did on Clinton when there was evidence that she committed felonies. Instead, they opened up a counterintelligence investigation in the absence of any incriminating evidence or evidence implicating the Trump campaign and Russian espionage. And this was at the height, with the most critical time of the 2016 presidential race. There's proof now that the FBI collaborated with the CIA. James Comey collaborated with John Brennan to conduct to derail an American political campaign. And they used foreign intelligence surveillance and informants. Mic drop moment right there. That's it right there. Donald Trump tweeted about this yesterday. Wow, word seems to be coming out that the Obama FBI spied on the Trump campaign with an embedded informant. Andrew McCarthy says, there's probably no doubt that they had at least one confidential informant in the campaign. If so, writes Donald Trump, this is bigger than Watergate. Yeah, I would say. So, let me throw some names at you. Eight names, okay? And I've talked about each of these eight people during the course of this show. But if you have a pen and paper, these are the eight individuals, FBI and Department of Justice, involved at the operational level. Okay, very key distinction here. Operational level. You've got Andrew McCabe, James Comey, James Baker, and James Rybicki. A whole lot of Jims there, right? Okay, so let me give the first four. Andrew McCabe, James Comey, James Baker, and James Rybicki. You've got Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, Bruce Orr, and Mike Cortan. All right, those are, again, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Bruce Orr, and Mike Cortan. So those are eight names. You can go to Conservative Treehouse, and there's an article. In fact, there's an article about McCarthy's discussion. I didn't know this. Okay, McCarthy appeared on Fox and Friends. All right, I did not know that. So apparently, as a result of the column that he wrote, So there you have it. And it's important to understand just what I said. This is where we're at today. So now you've got Mueller, who is just trying to keep his head above water in the marking of the year of his attempted coup against Donald Trump. And who's behind Mueller, of course? You've got the usual suspects, but again, so and it's a floundering investigation. And you've got Rudy Giuliani saying, we're going to shred you, basically, to Mueller. Now, again, it's interesting. You've got Donald Trump, who speaks what's on his mind, perhaps not so eloquently. I can relate to that. And Rudy Giuliani, part of the legal team, kind of a pit bull kind of thing, going after Mueller as well. Now, let me insert something here. This might be anecdotal when we're talking about this. There, when I was looking at the 502 pages of the struck page text messages, and there was a very astute commenter speaking about the Conservative Treehouse, very astute commenter, Kofifi999, who pointed this out. I saw this too. And in fact, I've got my notes, handwritten notes here, because I did kind of want to go back to this and look at this. It was on page 335 of the 502 pages. And don't worry, this weekend I'm going to be putting some stuff up. I'm going to be putting some stuff up in the forum. Yeah, I know. And writing, again, I've just been so slammed. But anyway, when you look at the conversation and the text messages between Strzok and Page, on page 335 of the text exchanges, Lisa Page, asked Peter Strzok if he's come up with a code name for the operation. He responds with the code name, which was redacted, by the way. And Lisa Page says, oh, I like that. But take a look at the area redacted and the print or the font size. And what you'll find is Crossfire Hurricane doesn't fit. It does not fit. So does it matter? I don't know. But it certainly doesn't fit in that text. This is just kind of anecdotal. If you would make the font size the same and then insert it over the redacted area, no, it does not fit there. So I'm not sure that is the... I don't know what to make of that. So what do you guys think of that? I don't know what to make of it. It doesn't matter. And by the way, I didn't find anything subsequent to that would indicate Crossfire Hurricane or any other code name mentioned. That was the only part in that 500 pages that, roughly 500 pages, that was referenced to that. So, I don't know what difference that makes. I don't want to sound like Hillary Clinton, but again, doesn't matter. Now, the other part of this, too, is Jeff Sessions. Many people are really hating on Jeff Sessions. I get that. I understand that. Many people are very... come on, enough is enough. Let's get this thing on the road. Well, again, the time will tell. What we'll be telling is when the Horowitz report comes out. By the way, the Horowitz report, the draft has already come out, and it's under review. So we can kind of set our calendars and watches to the fact that within 2 weeks, within 10 days, to 10 to 14 days, the actual OIG's report will come out. So when that does come out, what will tell the tale about Jeff Sessions, whether he's a good guy and going to do the right thing, or whether he's just a stump, is what his response will be to the OIG report. If he will act upon the OIG report and the Huber suggestions of by Huber. That's going to tell the tale. And I have a feeling if he doesn't respond with you know, positively, then there's going to be trouble on the right. And if he does respond, there's going to be trouble on the left. But regardless, there's going to be trouble nonetheless. That's my view. And I mentioned, I did mention Laura Ingraham. I mentioned Laura Ingraham, Roger Stone appearing there, and of course the identification of Stefan Halper. All right. What's important to realize here is that, I'm going to cite Conservative Treehouse again in Sundance because he does great work on this. When it was 2 days before the New York Times article came out outlining the FBI counterintelligence sting, that operation to infiltrate the Donald Trump campaign, what Sundance wrote was, "I've got a sneaking suspicion that the Machiavellian connections between the U.S. intelligence apparatus and multiple foreign agency and actors, including the work of Stefan Halper in the 2016 presidential election, are only a few days from fully surfacing." And he was right, or she or they were right. And there could be enough sunlight on the UK-US political intelligence officers to launch multiple investigations. Okay, where does Stefan Halper come into this, and why is this important? Well, Stefan Halper is, by the way, a U.S. citizen teaching at Cambridge, active within multiple presidential administrations. But originally, the attention was paid to Glenn Simpson, saying that August, remember his testimony back last August? The FBI had some additional inside knowledge in addition to Christopher Steele's information. Remember that? Now, if you don't worry about it. Talk of campaign interlopers increased last week after the Department of Justice and the FBI stonewalled Devin Nunes and accused him of trying to reveal the identity of a confidential CIA-FBI source for the 2016 origination of the FBI counterintelligence operation against Donald Trump. People began connecting Glenn Simpson's prior 2017 testimony about inside sources to the 2018 Department of Justice statements about exposing the sources of the FBI and CIA. And due to the defense of leaks from within the corrupt intelligence apparatus, the name Stefan Halper was identified, and he was identified. He's a foreign policy expert, as I said, Cambridge professor, U.S. citizen, with connections to the CIA, but also with connections to MI6. So when I say this is bigger than, this is global, you know, we talk about globalists, and these are the globalists, this is bigger, this is on a global scale, because what Brennan did, now, this is my reasoned opinion based on my research, what Brennan did, because, of course, he didn't want to overtly violate the mandate where the CIA cannot work on American soil. He worked with British and other intelligence. Remember, the Five Eyes, the five intelligence agencies. He worked with the other intelligence agencies and used their assets to spy on Donald Trump and the people within his campaign. Including Stone, by the way, including others who communicated with Roger Stone. Huh. Okay. Anyway, the New York Times wrote the following. "The FBI obtained phone records and other documents using national security letters, which are a secret type of subpoena. And at least one government informant met several times with Carter Page and Papadopoulos. This, according to current and former officials, that has become a politically contentious point with Donald Trump and his allies questioning whether the FBI was spying on the Trump campaign or trying to entrap campaign officials. And Stefan Halper connects to the same circle of intelligence operatives that Christopher Steele used for his that piece of garbage dossier. And let's not forget Bruce Orr, Department of Justice, Nellie Orr." I did a whole program, I think, on Bruce and Nellie Orr. Diana West, what a great researcher, great author, great lady, talking about Nellie Orr, this Russian Stalin apologist feeding information to Bruce Orr at the Department of Justice. She was working for Fusion GPS. Okay, anyway, I digress. But there you've got it. This is huge. This is global. again, Stefan Helper connects to the same circle of operatives that Steele used. And the Helper's role looks pretty simple, pretty clear-cut. Make the low-level Trump campaign aides appear dirty. Kind of like the example I used. Make you look dirty. You sit down for lunch. The guy, FBI guy says, hey, I've got this foolproof thing about robbing the bank. And you say, oh, really? What makes you think that? Or, you know, where'd you come up with that? Well, that's kind of out of left field, isn't it? What's going on? And then the FBI agent reporting to, again, his superiors, hey, we talked about robbing the bank during lunch that day. Well, one of you did. But anyway, that's the example that I'm using. But when you look at this close circle of politically connected intelligence insiders from the United States under Brennan, from the British, from Australian, and from Russian intelligence insiders, this is a much larger conspiracy. The information provided by the international crew was apparently shaped and funneled, again, by John Brennan to the FBI for domestic political exploitation and use. And there it is. There it is, right there. I cannot make it any simpler than this. I can't. And as I said yesterday, I think it was, and as I've been saying, you know, when you look at things, when you draw the lens back and you look at everything that's going on, you look at the push for censorship of conservative voices, it's more than that. Does the timing seem a little bit too coincidental when finally we're getting to the truth of really what happened, and we're seeing that Obama's hands were dirty, we're seeing that the true criminal nature of all of the deeds by Hillary and Bill Clinton and all of the criminal activities of the whole gang here? Isn't it a little bit more than curious that suddenly Twitter and Facebook and all the social networking platforms are pushing back and they won't let this see the light of day? And certainly MSNBC, NBC, CBS, and on and on and on, you're not going to hear this anywhere. The only closest place you're going to hear any of this is Fox and Fox Business News, the two cable outlets. You're not going to read this in the New York Times except accidentally, or when they've got to insert the story, you know, this 4,100 page or word story way back in page 19 and say, oh, that's old news now, you know, we already talked about that. But here's the thing. The powers, the people I mentioned, the individuals behind the military, industrial, congressional, intelligence complex, to pile on the Eisenhower quote, are not going to let this, don't want this to see the light of day. In the end, when the legacy of Barack Hussein Obama is written in the history books, it will be a legacy of corruption, of criminality, of deception, of deceit, and most assuredly of division. Because from all of this, we're seeing this great divide. The division in the United States of America has never been greater among the people, among the political classes, among the races, and even within families. It's never been greater. But let me be clear. Everyone, every thinking American and every person listening to this show, the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, whether you're on U.S. soil or in a free country elsewhere, you should be angry. You should be intent on exposing exactly what happened. Barack Hussein Obama used the power of the United States, the intelligence agencies, along with other intelligence agencies of foreign countries, the British, among others, they infiltrated and attempted to sabotage the political opposition, the campaign of Donald Trump. And if that would have happened to anyone else, there would be anger flowing over. But because some people think that Donald Trump is an oaf and ogre, and, you know, nah. This is a danger to our representative republic, our constitution, our nation, and we as a people. And this is a danger to our children and their children. We have to get this out. We've got to tell. Let's scream this from the rooftops. And I ask you, if it's important to you, please. I can only do so much. I can do this program. Please promote this program, not for any personal purpose, just to get the word out. Even if you want to write something on your own. I mean, just based on what I said. I mean, the research I've done and the open source research and the research so many others have done. Just get this out. The last 18 months, the left, the Democratic Socialists, have spent attempting to cover their tracks. They've lied. They've obstructed. They've stonewalled, especially in the congressional attempts at oversight. The question is, are we going to stand by and do nothing? Is justice to those people involved, as I mentioned, is it coming, or will it be swept under this bureaucratic rug of the deep state? We need to wake up. We need to do something right now. And, you know, to put it another way, especially people my age, it seems like we are fighting a cold war within our own government. Now people are ready for a hot war. We've got Marxist Muslim traitors infiltrated into our government. It didn't begin with Obama, but it certainly accelerated under Obama. Obama, don't forget, the most scandal-free administration, and I use the word administration with it's a regime in history, at least if you ask him, that's what it is. And you'll see these memes floating around there, you know, no special counsel during Obama's 8 years, but Clinton and Bush and so on, yeah. And look, well, that's by design. When you control the House, remember, the House always wins, but when you control the House, when you control the bets, when you control the playing field, that, of course, that's what happens. But, you know, I do say this. I want to give everyone hope, because I think right now, each and every one of us, we've got that job. You and I, we've got a job to do. And maybe you don't know what it is right now. Maybe you're looking for that specific purpose for which you were born. But I believe everyone was born for this time, this place. You are where you're at, not by accident, but by God's design. Now, I'm not a pastor, I'm not a minister, I'm an investigator. I'm a crusty old investigator, and that's it. But I do believe in a higher power. I do believe in God. And I do believe that God's got this. It's up to us, however, to identify with what our job is. That's what I think. Each and every one of you is listening to this program. You've got a job to do. You are extremely important. You. I'm talking to you. Sit down here. I'm talking to you. You're important in all of this. And we need to work together to get this information out and to work together to press for justice. One justice system for everybody. Not dual justice systems, but one. One nation under God. One justice system. Lastly, as I close the program, I'm going to go take Lady the studio dog, who came to the studio with me, for a walk. It's a beautiful spring day. I would urge you to do the same. Well, if you don't have a dog or whatever, but embrace the day. Don't squander the day. Tell your wife, your husband, that you love them. And you know what? Be of good cheer. Know that God's got this. And together we can win. God bless you.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to the Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.